Fifth case of the day, EEOC versus Northern Star Hospitality. Mr. Schwartz.
A lot of people interested in renting tapes or renting movies.
Mr. Schwartz.
May it please court, counsel. My name is Michael Schwartz. I represent the appellants, Northern Star Properties, Northern Star Holdings, and North Star Hospitality. If I might here refer to those entities as properties, which is the entity that owns the real estate. Hospitality is the entity that owned the First Green Mill restaurant, then Sparks Restaurant, and Holdings, the entity that owns the Denny's franchise.
Do they own the Denny's restaurant now?
Yes, Your Honor, it's a Denny's restaurant now.
Yeah, but I mean, it's the same ownership?
Chris Bracken is the same owner of the all three entities, yes.
I know, but properties?
No, there was a new entity formed to own the Denny's franchise.
Okay.
And there was a new entity that was formed prior to the EEOC's complaint in this action. And as evidenced by the EEOC's own brief, the entity was approved to become a Denny's franchise even prior to when they brought this action. So, an important fact. The EEOC argues at page 27 in its brief, and I think this is important, that they did not amend the complaint to add a joint employer theory. To the contrary, if you look at the complaint, it's one of the only things that they do ask for. They use at paragraph 9 that hospitality and properties and holdings have been a single employer. And then at each of their prayers for relief, they base it on a successor or joint employer theory. So for the EEOC to say at this point that it did not amend its complaint to add properties and holdings as defendants under a joint employer theory is unfortunately not accurate. The case is a little bit confusing because of the manner in which it was addressed both by the EEOC and by the district court. Importantly, when this matter was presented to the court for the one-day court trial, the court itself indicated that the issue presented was to determine whether or not there was a single employer and whether or not there would be liability for the real estate company, properties, or for the new Denny's company, holdings, to have liability for a single action, single incident that took place when it was a Sparks restaurant owned by Hospitalities. The EEOC says at page 28 of its brief that the key issue is the lack of corporate formalities among the different corporations. EEOC also notes that the record evidence mostly is undisputed. And this is where the district court got it wrong. And this is where I think if we just stop and look at the corporate formalities, the court will find that it's undisputed that corporate formalities were followed to a T with respect to each of the events here. Undisputed that all three entities were properly formed as Wisconsin corporations. Properties in 2004, the Green Mill entity, Hospitality in 2004. It's undisputed that they continued to maintain their separate corporate entities up through 2009 and 2010. They filed annual tax returns. They filed annual corporate minutes, where they would review the tax returns and they would affirm by corporate minute what was reflected in the tax returns. And importantly, there was a lease, a written lease, in July of 2009 for a term of 6 years. It's important because the incident that serves as the basis for this took place in 2010. There was a formal written lease. It was executed by both properties and by hospitality. There was a formal written action by properties authorizing the entity to enter into the lease. There was a formal written action by hospitalities to enter into the lease. And then the lease itself had various provisions. As the court noted, it was a typical standard triple net lease where the tenant paid the mortgage, the tenant paid the taxes, the tenant paid the operating expenses, etc.
Now, is all of this supposed to show that there's no successor? This is not a successor?
Well,
I mean, you have all these interesting things set up. I know there's an old thing, as you remember, Ross Perot said, follow the money.
Follow the money.
And we have this debt that's floating around and it seems to still exist. It's just the same, what's his name, Brecken? What's his name?
Yeah. Chris Brecken.
Brecken, yeah.
Well,
it seems to be his option to where to put it. And I'm just curious, as this is, I think that it's, we don't even get to piercing the corporate veil. It's more a matter of seeing if this is a successor in to all of that that would maybe retain the obligation to pay the judgment.
Well, successor liability and piercing the corporate veil liability are obviously two separate things.
Yeah, I've said we don't need to get to that if we talk about a successor.
You want to talk about successor?
Well, I think that's at least one.
Okay.
One thing.
Well, successor liability requires that the entity actually be the successor. Properties wasn't the successor. Properties was set up to own the real estate. There was no money transferred, no assets transferred from hospitality to properties. None. Zero. And the debt you refer to, Judge, is a debt that accrued over a period of years from 2004 up through 2012. And it was operating losses. The tax returns establish this was not a very profitable operation. It's why it went from a green mill, which lost money, to a Sparks in an effort to try and have it make money, but it still lost money. So there was money that was invested to cover the operating expenses, and that's the money that came from Chris Brecken. It came from Geometrics. It came from Rice Lake Harley. And so there was money that was loaned to hospitality to cover operating expenses. Successor liability is when you take the asset of an entity that's got a judgment or might have a judgment, mm-hmm. and you send those assets off someplace else, and it prevents the judgment.
Leave the Hollow Corporation behind.
Right.
Yeah,
leave them behind. Hold the creditor behind. That's not what happened here. In fact, quite the opposite. Quite the opposite. There were funds that were loaned to hospitality to cover these operating losses. And in 2010, at the time of the incident, hospitalities couldn't have paid any judgment at all. There were several hundred thousand dollars in negative revenues over the years. It had no assets that could have satisfied a judgment. It never did. But from a successor liability standpoint, the important issue is, and it's undisputed in these briefs, it's undisputed in the record, no assets of hospitality were transferred to either properties or transferred to the new entity that owns the Denny's.
So none. The Denny's restaurant, it's the same building, isn't it?
It is in the same building. There's no question it's in the same building. There's an entity that owns a building, and it's not uncommon that if a restaurant goes out of business, the landlord that owns the building is going to hopefully try and find another restaurant.
Oh, sure. It's all set up, kitchen and everything.
Well, no, and that's another important fact, Judge. This was not all set up. And this is an important distinction. Denny's corporate requires a very specific way in which they prepare their food. They require you to use their cups and saucers and toilet paper, literally. Spoons, forks, their restaurant equipment, their freezers, everything has to be in compliance with the Denny's franchise. So when Sparks went out of business, hospitality went out of business, June 3rd closed its doors, last customer served. Under the lease, it had an obligation to surrender the premises, and under that lease obligation, it had to remove its equipment, it had to remove its fixtures. And for a couple of months, that's what was being done. You'll note there were three employees of Sparks that were assisting in that, that collectively were paid about $4,000 a month between the three of them to help get that done.
Did the stuff that was removed have any of that value?
It had no value. It was all scrapped. Okay. Again, undisputed.
Right.
Undisputed in the record. Okay. You know, you have to take this stuff out. It just had no value. So there was nothing that the new entity received from hospitality. There's nothing that properties received from hospitality with the exception of compliance under the lease to surrender the property. Now, it's also important to note, Judge, that there was no payment of rent by the old entity, hospitalities, at any time when the new entity started up Denny's. Denny's started serving customers in October. You know, 4 months later, unlike the situation where you've got the guy who owns a restaurant and slightly changes the name or leaves it the same, you got the same menu, you got the same plates, you got the same demeanor. This is not that kind of case, and we cited a case where that was allowed as successor liability. It's almost difficult to imagine a more different situation than what existed here. And that's the importance of knowing that it was operated as a Denny's under the very strict operational rules that Denny's had. So with respect to the successor liability, there was no successor. There were no assets. There was no succession. Hospitalities filed articles of dissolution on June 3rd. And it's important, and I think the district court didn't quite understand, but it's important
who
to know...
Who owed the judgment? Hospitalities?
Hospitalities, yes.
Okay, so hospitalities disintegrated, and therefore there's no entity that owes, what's his name, any money.
Again, no, essentially the hospitalities dissolved prior to the trial. They couldn't continue to operate at these kinds of losses.
So all of this stuff with Denny's is all new money then?
All new money. It is. And what was done, Judge, with respect to the tax returns and the closing of these entities, dissolution isn't something that happens one day. You file your articles of dissolution, and dissolution, as we've cited in our brief, is a process. You marshal your assets, you pay your liabilities, and that's what they did. And at the end of the year, the accountants and generally accepted accounting principles wrote off the various loans that had been accrued over the years to cover the operating losses that had existed over those years. So there is no successor liability. I'll address the corporate formalities by simply saying, if you look at every action that was taken, the corporate formalities were followed, and rather not just followed, quite admirably followed in that there were written leases, there were written minutes authorizing everything that was done, and there were annual written actions by the shareholders authorizing the transactions that took place as set forth in the various tax returns.
How many shareholders were there?
Just one. Yeah. Chris Brecken, one owner.
I think that was the district judge's problem, wasn't it?
I think it was.
He's the one and only. And when you have all of this stuff that goes on, there's money coming from somewhere, but the debt was just shifted around. I think she was concerned about that.
I think she was concerned with that, but that frankly misses the point in terms of why you have successor liability. If you own a company, it shouldn't matter whether you get the money from Chase Manhattan or Derry State Bank or you get the money from another company that you happen to own. As long as you keep it separate and you do those formalities, which is exactly what he did, and it's why they had the corporate records, it's why they had the financial statements that allowed them, you know, to the nickel to say, here's, this came from this entity, this came from this entity, etc. And, you know, sometimes if one owner owns the separate companies, it has your antenna up, and that's okay. But when you look carefully at the way this was structured and the way things took place, nothing was done improperly. The corporate formalities were maintained. And I think most importantly, judges, there was no transfer of assets or anything done that prejudiced the ability of the EEOC or Mr. Miller to collect when they ultimately did get that judgment. They couldn't have collected from 2009, probably if you go back all the way to 2005, there were negative assets and negative retained earnings.
You want to save some time for rebuttal, Mr.
Yes, Lewis. Thank you, Your Honor.
Yes, thank you. Ms. Gantz.
Good morning, Your Honors. May it please the Court. This Court held a one-day bench trial where the Court considered all the evidence of the various ways that the single shareholder, director, and officer, Chris Brecken, moved money around, drained the assets from hospitality until it could no longer pay a judgment that the Commission obtained. Now, starting back early when hospitalities and properties were formed, there was no lease produced until 2009, 5 years after those two companies were formed. Then properties was actually listed in the Sparks, which is the properties hospitality restaurant house rules, as the entity that the employee would have to sign that it was following the rules of properties, even though Brecken testified it was just the landlord, it wasn't the restaurant. Properties was also listed on the checking account that the company opened until 2009. It was the client involved in the payroll going out to employees for at least 2 years. So there were no corporate formalities followed in terms of hospitalities and properties. And the lease itself, it had the hospitality paying all the business expenses and the mortgage. But that lease was dissolved when hospitality was dissolved. But hospitality kept writing checks. Even all summer and all fall, it was writing checks to turn Sparks into a Denny's. It was writing checks for payroll of the few remaining employees who were working to turn Sparks into a Denny's. It paid for them to be trained through Denny's training program, and it paid down the mortgage, which was now, because Holdings, when it was created, took over the lease. It was actually Holdings' job to be paying the mortgage, not when it took possession, but when it took over the lease. Instead, hospitality used all its assets to benefit Holdings or benefit properties. That is why the corporate formalities should not have not been followed and the corporate veil should be pierced, as the district court held. The district court held, in addition, that Holdings was the successor corporation to hospitality because all three parts of this court's test for finding successor liability were met. Because Brecken was the only individual involved with all three companies, he had full knowledge of this liability that the commission had filed suit and that the company was potentially liable for the discrimination alleged. It was clear that the company could not meet any judgment that the commission obtained. The commission obtained injunctive relief, which now that the company hospitalities is dissolved, could not be ordered. And because hospitality drained all of its assets away to do things to turn Sparks into Denny's and to pay down the mortgage, it had no money left. It had hospitality was owed $329,000, but it just disappeared in some kind of moving around of assets by Brecken. He would add money either from his personal funds or from another company. And because basically hospitality was doing poorly and owed him more money, it just disappeared. But that was money that could have been used to pay the commission's judgment. So those first two things are met. And then the third part of the successor liability test that the court held was met, this continuity of business operations. And as the court found, it's the same type of business. It's a restaurant, sit-down restaurant with food production using the same employees. They had nearly half, or I think just about half, the employees from the Sparks. They used all the managers. They had the same work rules, and they were in the same type of business in the exact same building, and it is the exact same owner, director, and shareholder who is still there. It's not a case in some successor liability cases where it's a third party who doesn't know about the liability that the former company is facing. Here, Brecken had full knowledge of the liability for that company, and his moving money around so that now the commission cannot get relief for Mr. Miller should not be sanctioned by this court. So the court and this court should affirm the district court's holding. It's an abuse of discretion standard of review. The court listened to the witnesses and decided, after all the testimony and after all the documents reviewed, that both the successor liability should be met with respect to holdings, and that both properties and holdings should be liable as an entity with hospitality under piercing the corporate veil. So the court found that all these requirements had been met, and that it would create an injustice not to be able to enforce this judgment.
So Holdings is the company, I guess?
Holdings is the Denny's now.
Yeah, is that the one that you think should be paying Miller's judgment?
Well, both properties and Holdings are liable. Only Holdings would be a successor since that company came after. Properties is liable because the corporate veil was pierced, because corporate formalities were not followed.
Properties owns the building, is that right?
Correct, Your Honor. But even after hospitality dissolved, it was still paying down the mortgage that properties for the restaurant, and was also paying down a business loan it had received from the regional business fund. So that even though the Holdings had now taken over the lease at this point, this was in the summer of 2012, so even though it was now Holdings' responsibility under the terms of the lease to pay for all these things, it was hospitality that was writing the checks. And even though hospitality apparently was doing terribly financially, it still managed to pay for the Denny's training, it managed to pay for the build-out of the Denny's, it paid for painting and electrical work, it paid it was paying quite a bit, $4,000 a month just for payroll of the few employees that were cleaning up and getting it ready to be Denny's. But half the employees from the Sparks, the hospitality restaurant, became Denny's employees, and three or four managers became.
Half of them, is that what you said?
Excuse me?
Half of them?
Half. It was, it was 19 of the 40 employees, and then there were three to four managers that also became managers at the Denny's. And that really shows the continuity of operations. It was the same personnel, the same type of business, serving food, the same methods of production, the same working conditions. That is what has been found to be continuity of injury.
The people who were disciplined or admonished or whatever, not fired, did they end up with Denny's?
They did not, Your Honor, but that's really not part of the inquiry.
I just am asking that because...
And I just wanted to clarify, this area of law is a bit confusing because some cases use the term single employer to mean integrated enterprise, but this court does not use in Title VII cases anymore, and that was the main argument the defendants made, is that the corporate formalities were followed at the time of the discrimination. But you look at the whole picture when you're piercing the corporate veil and see, were these companies entitled to be looked at as individual companies and entitled to the protection of limited liability? Particularly in the successor liability case, that has a very strong history of being used in the employment discrimination context because of the basic fairness issues that play into it, where a victim of discrimination is helpless when the company changes ownership or dissolves to collect its judgment, and then the successor is in an excellent position to actually provide relief if they know about the liability in advance, because they can negotiate for a lower price for the company, or they can sign something saying they're not going to be liable. So because Congress meant Title VII to be a broad, equitable statute, there's really a presumption in favor of finding successor liability in the employment discrimination and labor context. I also wanted to just mention that the other basis for the appeal was the 15% addition of the back pay that the court awarded. And this, it's hard to overstate the amount of discretion a court has in awarding equitable relief under the anti-discrimination statutes. And there's no case that says that expert testimony is required. And in fact, because of the relatively low amount of the addition, around $6,000, for the commission to actually hire an expert to perform what are straightforward mathematical calculations using the income tax brackets that are widely available would not have been a very good use of taxpayer money and would have ended up probably costing more than the amount itself. And this, every case when a district court is looking at whether to award equitable relief is based on the facts of it, and there's no one criteria that's taken into account. And because Mr. Miller was a low-wage worker and had not made any money in 2011, it took him over a year and a half to get another job after he was fired. His income was going to more than double with this back pay award and would have obviously put him in another tax bracket. And I just also wanted to point out the 15% was actually the lowest amount that could have been used to do the calculation. His income with his earnings and the back pay award would have actually put him into an even higher tax bracket of 25%. But because the court decided to use the 15%, it came up with a relatively modest addition of just over $6,000. So we would request that that also be affirmed, and that was also an abuse of discretion standard of review. All
right. Thank you, Ms. Gans. Mr. Schwartz.
I'll briefly address this 15% addition that the court so willingly gave to the commission. Saying that it might cost more to present math calculations or present tax brackets into evidence is not an excuse for failing to fulfill the burden of proof that's required. The court's not allowed to speculate, and that's what the court did here. In fact, they acknowledge that in their brief. They call it extrapolate, but it's mere speculation, and it was an abuse of discretion to do so. There's six things that came up in her argument that I would like to address. First, they say the money disappeared, assets disappeared. Not true. Nothing disappeared. When the corporation was dissolved, there were accounting entries that were made at the end of the year when it was dissolved to reflect the write-off of the debts that were owed to Mr. Brecken, that were owed to Geometrics, that were owed to other entities that loaned cash money to hospitalities. No assets disappeared. No money was moved around. There were not assets drained. That's unfounded, unsupported. There are no facts for that. If that had been the case, this would be a whole different situation. The obligations that were paid by hospitality after it closed the doors on June 3rd, every one of them, every check that was written was an obligation that was owed by hospitality under the lease upon surrender of the premises. Saying you're going to terminate the lease does not relieve you of those obligations. Hospitality saved over $400,000 in future lease payments had it continued on. And so it fulfilled its obligations under the lease until the new entity, the new Denny's, the Holdings, took possession. And as soon as Denny's took possession, Denny's started paying for everything, the mortgage, the utilities, everything. And so to argue that because you fulfilled your obligations under a lease, that somehow makes the entity who's moving into this building to start a new business, that's not successor. That's not piercing the corporate veil. And if you hire 19 out of 40 employees who'd been out of work for 4 months, because it had been closed for 4 months, that's not successor liability. That's not a continuation of the operations. It's hiring some folks who are unemployed to work in a restaurant now. And finally,
how large a community was this, Mr. Schwartz?
It's in Menominee, Wisconsin, and it's about 13,000. So there was some folks at that point 4 months later who didn't have jobs and who were given jobs. Mr. Miller didn't apply for one. So we would respectfully ask that if you look carefully at this, Judge, and reverse this, because it's unfair and it's unjust to hold this new entity responsible for something it had nothing to do with.
All right.
Thank you very much.
Okay. Thank you, Ms. Schwartz. Thank you again, Ms. Gantz. Case is taken under advisement.